Good morning, everybody.
Welcome. Roll call, please.
Bruce Rinker.
Here.
Debbie Berry.
Here.
Dan Moore. Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
Please join us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So first up, if can have a motion to approve the meetings from our last meeting in May 18th, subcommittee amendment.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Financial report.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
So these are the financial results through the first 5 months of this year. It's on. So looking at the Park District as a whole, and starting with the property tax line, this is highlighted only just to point out that, as was mentioned last month, we had an unfavorable variance last month. This is the homestead rollback. We still receive it on the inside millage, just not on the outside millage any longer since the replacement levy. So this was received in May this year. It was part of the April receipt in 2022. So it's just a timing difference. But when you look at the year-to-date property tax figure of 10.3 million, as Wade's been discussing for the last few months, our first half property receipts continue to align with our budgeted expectation that by the time we reach the end of the year, we'll be about $12 to $14 million ahead of where we were before the replacement levy. And although it's not highlighted, I just want to point out on the local government grants and gifts line, the $2.8 million of revenue there for the month of May is primarily the Zoo Society's support of Susie's Bear Hollow construction at the zoo. And the total line, the total year-to-date value of about $8.8 million, I think is just demonstrative of the great work that the Zoo Society, our development department, the marketing department has done to continue to generate really strong grants, gifts, donations, sponsorships. On the charges for services line, I've highlighted where we are at year-to-date. When we get to the next several slides for the zoo and golf and enterprise, we can get into a little bit more detail, but I think stating the obvious, the weather in May was absolutely beautiful, and it shows in our results for the month and continues to drive a great year-to-date result. I highlighted the salaries and benefits variance year over year, just to make the point that we now believe when you look at it year over year, the month of May and the year to date, it really drives home the fact that we believe we've now reached a normal, a quote unquote normal level of staffing across the organization in the post pandemic world. And this positions us really to provide a high level of service and to be able to manage higher and higher levels of guest activity.
But doesn't that mean though that the fact that it in terms of hours purchased, we're probably buying fewer hours, right?
I think we're being more efficient with the time that we're spending. When we talk about enterprise is a good example where the pandemic forced them to think about new ways to deliver service, new technologies, and ways to manage flow. So we are able to generate greater amounts of revenue with a smaller workforce. So I think we're proving out that model is really working. You know, like the chalet was a good example. I think it's technology and it's a better delivery model.
But you're right, Dan, the wages had to go up to be competitive for the seasonal hours. So there is a push and a pull on it.
Yeah.
So, but right now our full-time staff is, we have a, we're more fully staffed than we have been in probably 3 years. So, which is a very positive story. Mm-hmm.
But in terms of raw numbers, is there a difference then? We're operating basically where we were, but with less, still somewhat less workforce?
For sure, in the seasonal realm. Seasonal. Yeah, absolutely.
Seasonal is the big difference.
But if you compared, I think your point, Bruce, is if you compared May 22 to May 23, it would be interesting to have a number that would define the number, the staff level, the people level you know, in a year-to-date basis to show how much more efficient we're being. I'll bet we're being about 15% more efficient.
Yeah, I mean, you know, each year is just a different scenario too, because of you throw the weather and you can, you know, you can dump 2 weeks worth of hours, you know, in a month because of rain, which can skew the numbers very quickly as well. So I think, you know, if we get a few more years of what we would call normal, then you could start to make, you know, pretty significant, you know, hypotheses on, you know, whether we're pushing and pulling.
But it's still seasonal, really, is where the changes are.
Correct.
We have certain, it's like core and then elective.
Yeah. But year to date, it'll sort of wash out a lot of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So thanks to the increased revenue on the property tax side, and then also in charges for services, our operating surplus, we're about $12.6 million ahead of where we were last year at this point. And then just mentioning a few of the major capital projects going on the construction expenses line for the month of May, that $2.2 million. This is primarily Susie's Bear Hollow construction, the replacement of the roof at the PCA, Manikiki Management Center, Old Station Road in Brecksville, the Solon to Chagrin Falls Trail. Those are the major projects that are in there. And then year to date, they're the ones that Wade's been talking about all along. Again, Susie's Bear Hollow and management, as well as Garfield Pond, the Cheers study, the Gorge Parkway retaining wall, the zoo admin renovation. Those make up a lot of that $11.7 million that we've been spending in construction across the park district. And I thought I would mention on the capital equipment line, again, it's not highlighted, but the $814,000 that we spent in capital equipment in the month of May, of that $550,000 of that were IT purchases for servers and networking equipment, as well as clearing a really large backlog we had in computer requests that the supply chain issues really caused to languish for a long time. So a lot of that got cleared up in the month of May. And then on a net surplus basis, year to date, even with the significantly higher capital activity compared to 2022 through 5 months, we're still roughly $5 million ahead of the prior year.
Great.
Looking at the zoo, here's where we see on the general and special event admissions line, in this case, mostly general admissions. We're up almost $100,000 in general admissions for the month and over $200,000 for the year to date. The weather in May helped a great deal, dry and cool. On the Zoo Society line, I've just highlighted there, this is another timing difference. On last month's presentation, we had an unfavorable variance there. It's just the difference in the month we received the Zoo Society's payment. And then dropping down to capital construction expenses, already talked about Susie's Bear Hollow and the PCA roof. That's most of what's going on there and the $1.2 million that the zoo spent during the month of May. And then we highlighted the restricted revenue and expense, again, just to sort of emphasize the great level of support that we're receiving through restricted funds to fund capital projects. Many of the projects are, those restricted expenses are capital related. Moving on to golf. So golf continues to absolutely kill it. There, every line as you look is up year over year in great ways. To give you some metrics around that, by the end of March of this year, golf was about 5,000 rounds ahead of last year. At the end of April, golf was 18,000 rounds ahead of last year. Okay. And during May, nearly 10,000 more rounds were played than the prior May, bringing us to almost 28,000 rounds ahead. And some of those are 18 hole rounds.
Wow.
So you see that on the greens fees line. And then that increased golf throughput, it drives every other line. You can see there's not a line there where we aren't up significantly year over year. It's just a fantastic story there. And all the investment that's been made and all the systems and processes that have been put in place over all the years are really paying off at this point. So the operating surplus at golf year to date, rather than being slightly negative or about break even as we would normally be this time of year. You know, we're already $436,000 of operating surplus as we just start into the summer season. And then capital construction, almost all of that construction expense is at Manikiki for the maintenance center and the pump house and things that are being reinvested in that course. On a course by course basis, I think the takeaway here is that the great success in golf is shared across the entire division, not just at certain courses. Top line revenue is up everywhere. And because we report on a cash basis, the smaller courses, which also opened a little bit later in the season, they're more impacted by the purchases they make for items for resale and maintenance type of needs. That timing impact will correct itself as the season continues. And then on the capital equipment side, we just highlighted that $329,000. Those year-to-date purchases include a large purchase we made of used golf equipment that is going to be allocated across all the golf courses, as well as purchases of utility vehicles such as sprayers and Cushman haulers, range picker.
How were you able to get the used machines? That must have been a clever move.
Brian.
Auction sites. Essentially, a golf course in North Carolina was closing due to kind of a separation of the two partners, and they were liquidating the equipment. We flew down Dave Donner to take a look at it. We tagged the pieces of equipment. We put a letter of intent in and bought it. Right now, turf equipment is an extremely hard commodity to find, as well as golf carts. It's just with the pandemic, when the chips, the way the things were being built, they kept getting slid down. A greens mower a number of years ago was $35,000. Now it's $65,000. And so we're trying to find reconditioned pieces to be able to hopefully weather the storm until the prices kind of rebalance.
That's very creative.
For sure.
Moving on to enterprise, May monthly revenue in concessions was up $73,000 or 26% year over year. And through May, concessions revenue is up $207,000 or 37% year over year. So really fantastic improvement on the revenue line on concessions for enterprise. And as we talked about before, if you look at the salaries and benefits line, again, this is that same year over year comparison, this same idea that we've sort of hopefully reached a new normal, I guess, for enterprise, and they found a way to work within that and be really successful in providing experiences and service that the customers want. On an operating surplus basis, instead of being break even at this point of the year as we were last year, we're almost $300,000 of surplus at this point, which is a fantastic result. And then just a couple of comments on the individual enterprise locations. Merwin's Wharf revenue is up 54% compared to the prior year to date. And as we mentioned before, this is due to creativity and the customer experiences we're offering, the way that we're delivering the services, and absolutely has produced great results in terms of revenue and operating surplus.
Is it more hours as well? Is it open more than last year, or were we pretty normal last year?
It's open more. Yeah, we're
great.
That and a few special events, and you know, because of its location, the seasonality of it, weather helps drive when the patio's full. It does very well. When it rains, it doesn't. I mean, those are just the great equalizers. So again, when you're seeing all these numbers, I mean,
great weather.
Remember, we had a stretch of, you know, 24, 25 days without rain. So,
right.
You know, between people, the revenue, the hit, you know, eventually, you know, when you get to the midpoint of the year, that 4th of July, you kind of look, you know, as Bruce would say back, you know, Janice, look forward and backwards. That kind of gives you the perspective of what the year kind of will do. And it's kind of held itself true. So, you know, it's always nice to look at, you know, year to date performance, but you really want to look at your trajectory over a number of years. And the reality is that you've got the 20 and 21 sitting inside of there. So it's got all sorts of blips on it. So we're trying to manage the revenue to expense, the guest experience. The agent, you know, agency as a whole is doing very well between the zoo's numbers. Merwin's Wharf, very specifically, that team is, extremely dedicated to bring the numbers in line.
It's been great.
Golf has just seen, you know, with COVID, it saw just a tremendous uplift, and it's sustained. I think the industry would not have anticipated that it stayed this strong, to be very frank. I just, I think they anticipated a drop off, and we've actually gone, we continue to grow, which is absolutely fantastic. Now, courses are near capacity, so I don't think you're going to see much more than that. You know, there's only so many hours a day that you're selling tee time. So, you know, from the point that the commissioners approved all of the cart purchases, those are complete. The only way that we can produce more is to be able to buy more carts, which is an extremely hard thing to do. The Manikiki carts that are there will actually get dispersed in the system to help balance some of the challenges we have when we run out of carts. So it may, we may see a little bit, but then rounds still have to stay solid.
Yeah. Right.
So overall, you know, the expense to revenue ratio is what we're really concerned about as we're looking at it.
Brian, how have we done hiring seasonal employees?
Stay tuned, Commissioner Moore. You're going to hear in the information items, you'll get to see a very nice presentation from Dan Velasquez.
Excellent.
How we, I can tell you anecdotally, Commissioner, that the staff in the field is they're very well staffed right now, meaning the numbers that they were looking for, they got to hire this year. So we're very pleased at that. People are coming back. So stay tuned to kind of some of the things we did.
Good treatment.
The only other comment in this slide relates to the two marinas, 55th and Emerald Necklace. And I just wanted to point out that the dock rental fees and their operating surplus are up year over year, primarily as a result that we adjusted our fees this year to bring us more in line with the increased operating expenses that we have in maintaining those facilities. So that's helping out a great deal.
And what kind of increase was that, just in rough terms?
I want to say it was about 10%.
Say again.
10%. The dock fees. It
I don't
varied
think it's
on
quite
the type
10.
Of.
No.
Yeah. 6 to 8.
Yeah.
Was it 6 to 8? Thanks, Jim.
Have the new transient docks started to collect? And how are they?
They have. And if you look at the bottom, I think there's like $30 worth of revenue. I think it's
starting, huh?
It just literally started. It's kind of a pay by Park Mobile
app.
Yeah,
I saw.
And, you know, it's just people are having to find it right now. And,
right.
You know, early season, that doesn't dissuade us. I think early season, you know, it kind of, it's going to evolve. And school was still, you know, in session until about a week and a half ago. And,
right.
And then we had a little bit of rain yesterday, a few days. So we're very comfortable with where we're at. We're also trying to finish the electric pedestals, the hookups. We had to re-permit it to get it finished. So.
Got it.
It'll come.
Good. Yeah. No, I knew it just started.
But it's just a component of the grant. That wasn't a huge driver in a cost recovery model. It was more just being able to meter who comes in and comes out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it actually helped Merwin's numbers because we know anecdotally more boats are coming in.
Because they know they've got a place to park. Yeah.
Yep. Because they have a safe place to park off the river, grab food, and then they go along the river.
Yeah.
So
good.
It's definitely helped.
Can they stay overnight?
I don't believe we're allowing for overnight.
Yeah, no. So they get kicked out when the restaurant closes.
I think it's a 11 o'clock, which is really the closing hours of the park.
Okay.
On the second enterprise slide, most of these locations didn't open until late in the month. So, you know, the operating results you see, you know, they're ramping up both in terms of bringing people on staff and also getting purchases for the supplies they're going to need for the season. So, again, on a cash basis, you're seeing more expense than revenue because they only had a few days of revenue in this particular month. That'll all turn around. I'm willing to answer any questions if you have.
No, you covered it well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. And really, you know, the kudos goes out to the entire staff. I mean, they take their budgets very seriously and again, levels of creativity and balancing market rate with where we're at. So I give them a huge shout out. The very first action item we have is budget adjustment number 6. Gary.
So budget adjustment 6 is for a total increase in budget of $2.3 million. And nearly all of that increase relates to two capital projects, and those increases are both funded by grants, one from Cuyahoga County for Garfield Boulevard, and the other one for the Valley Parkway Bridge replacement, and that's from ODOT.
Recommended action falls on the bottom portion of page 9.
Move approval.
I approve or second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Next recommended action falls on page 10, the 2024 alternative tax budget. Gary.
So by statutory requirement of the ORC, the Board of Park Commissioners is required to adopt an annual tax budget for the next fiscal year. And we have to file this tax budget with the County Budget Commission by July 20th of this year. So in order to receive your approval of this tax budget in sufficient time to meet the county filing deadline, we held a public hearing on June 7th here at the administrative offices. It was conducted by our chief financial officer. This alternative tax budget certifies to the county that our 2024 proposed expenditures will necessitate collection of our full millage.
Recommended action falls in the bottom portion of page 10.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
On page 11, the revision to the change fund, just with the events that continue to happen in certain areas, including Edgewater Beach House, making sure we have enough petty cash. It's just a change in the amount. That recommended action falls in the top portion of page 11, just approving the revision to the change fund.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is an amendment to the license agreement with Lake Erie Nature and Science Center. Catherine Timko is in attendance. We very much appreciate her work. They have done an amazing job continuing to recruit, receive donations, grants, and others. They most recently received approval from the OFCC in the amount of $450,000. They also need then us to extend the date past the life of it for another 15 years, which is a requirement of the Ohio Facilities Construction Committee. The recommended action falls on the top portion of page 12. And again, I'd like to highlight Catherine Timko's continued dedicated leadership. They have done an amazing job and they continue to renovate and do a really great job for us as one of our proud affiliates.
It's great. Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the Viaduct Park expansion. Authorization to accept land donation and construct a reservable four-season picnic shelter in the city of Bedford. This is with the land reutilization program. This project predates me here at the Cleveland Metro Parks. And so it is really an unique opportunity for the Cleveland Metro Parks to continue working with the city of Bedford. It has taken a good bit of time to kind of really understand what this represents. It went into foreclosures, the old Taylor Chair Factory, but we have now successfully worked through an opportunity to renovate an area that really has not had much investment. The city of Bedford did negotiate well with us in reference to having it be a city amenity. They look forward to us building the Four Seasons facility and is actually very complimentary to Cleveland Metro Parks over time. So the recommended action falls with joy from our entire team to move this project off of our plates. In the middle portion of page 13, to accept the donation of a fee simple title in the 6.4 acres and continuing the tradition of working with municipalities yes. in a very prophetic way.
Yes. Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The next is the authorization of a vessel acquisition. This is barge 225. This is something Cleveland Metro Parks has put a great deal of time in and understanding of how to move. We engaged industry professionals to assess the logistics of moving this. Our ultimate end destination is in the Wildwood Park area. We look very much forward to creating a one-of-a-kind experience from an education capacity to have programmatic elements on the shores of Lake Erie. Recommended action falls in the mid-portion of page 14.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item is a Bay Village Fire Department remodel and addition. This is the authorization of a resolution to approve the plan. Back in 1971, the city of Bay Village assumed 1.89 acres contiguous to Huntington Reservation for their expansion and rebuild of their fire station. It does have a reverter clause if it is not used for a fire station. They continue to use it as, and they are looking at renovating in such a fashion. They came to us, our teams looked at it, and we are okay with what their plans are to renovate a original 1971 approval from the Cleveland Metro Parks Park District. The recommended action falls to approve the plans for the remodel related to the Bay Village Fire Department fall on middle portion of page 15.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is a contract amendment 1637, Cleveland Metro Parks First Tee Expansion. This has been a project that Metro Parks has been working with First Tee of Greater Cleveland for quite a number of years. We were most recently able to engage Cleveland Metropolitan School District and assume the final portions of the reservation. With that, the First Tee is committed to raising the funds relative to the renovation slash restoration of one of the core buildings on site. We did approve the original demo contract. Now we're working forward towards GMP2. We hope that they can continue to raise the funds. We look for a winter completion time. This is to, the board will authorize for the guaranteed maximum price number 2 with Turner Construction.
Commissioner Berry abstains?
Yes.
Need a motion?
Move the motion.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Just as clarifier, Debbie Berry did abstain from the vote. The next action item is the North Chagrin Euclid Creek Hinckley Reservation. This is an authorization to submit grant applications and commit funds. This is through the Ohio Department of Natural Resources Nature Works Program. We have had a very successful and long run working with ODOT through this very specific program. We will work to submit applications in multiple counties. This is in North Chagrin, the Squires Castle Trail rehabilitation slash replacement. We will be replacing a 30-foot wooden bridge in the North Chagrin Reservation. Euclid Creek Reservation will be renovating and resurfacing and repairing the basketball courts in the Highland Picnic area. And then in Hinckley Reservation, this is part of the Rising Valley Trail Park Project. This is in Medina County. So we covered Lake County, Medina County, and Cuyahoga County. This project will restore about a 1 mile part of the Blue Trail in the Rising Valley Park area. We also have the Rising Valley Park Trail construction in Summit County. So we have literally hit all 4 counties around us where we own land. So again, the team that include Natalie Ronan, Kristen Trulio, and the entire staff in each one of these respective areas is to be commended for their opportunities to find grant applications to do enhancements to the park. The recommended action falls on the bottom portion of page 18 to submit 4 grant applications for the Nature Works.
But Ryan, can I ask one question here? On the Rising Valley Park, the new trail there, does the Buckeye Trail run where it is on the map? So is it sort of a straight line kind of a deal?
I think it's very near there, to be very honest. I'd have to pull up. You'd have to pull up.
I would think we'd want to connect that to the Buckeye Trail to make it, because it looks like it's very close, so that you could have a little bit of the Buckeye traffic coming through us.
Yes.
You'd have a little thing of just a Metro Park side loop or something like that.
We'll make sure it's
your Buckeye.
Yeah.
Yes, we agree. Bang. Wherever possible, we continue to look at connections. Sometimes topography is unforgiving, and sometimes there's impediments. So I think just stay tuned as we get into it to look at that completion.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The next recommended actions fall in the top portion of page 19. Recommended action for the award of bids, commodity usage report, Ohio revised code for stone purchases, various food purchases, wireless data, and 1 new Caterpillar compact track loader.
And on those deals, the prices are the same. Right?
That is correct. Yeah. On the co-ops, anything that's already been bid, we literally can go off of.
Yeah.
So Charlie Rossell, the director of procurement, they scour them. We've used ones in Texas. We've used them all over the country. Anywhere where they've been publicly procured in proper fashion, they can be overlaid into our purchasing.
I see. Yeah.
The guaranteed prices.
Second.
I moved. He second. Yes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Approval of vouchers and payroll.
Resolution 2306094 presents $11,558,248.14 of vouchers and payroll. These have been reviewed for the legality of expenditure in conformity with the ORC.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Move now to public comments. Councilman, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. Mr. President, members, it's always good to be here at Metro Parks. Brian and the team, I was here to support general action item number F, authorization of the vessel acquisition, barge 225 for Wildwood. I just want to thank the board for the action that they took. This is all about growing our lakefront, our footprint along the lakefront. Cleveland City Council took action recently. We passed legislation to expand public access to the west of the Euclid Beach Pier, working with Cuyahoga County on that plan. We're also in negotiations and discussions with the county what we can do to expand public access to the east of Wildwood. And by the acquisition of the barge by Metro Parks, really will put Wildwood Park on the map. It's a wonderful park now, but what it lacks is real a draw and a place for people to come and gather. This will give us that opportunity by having this facility, the barge there. And just by getting it out there, this has always been a dream of ours to get a barge or a boat out there at the park. It now is going to take place. So I'm here to support the action of Metro Parks and say thank you. And I look forward to working with Brian and the team and you to bring this about. I'm not clear exactly on a time frame, but I'm hoping it's going to be soon.
We're working on it.
Well, I know you're working on it, and I'm here to be supportive of it. So I want to say thank you.
Thanks. Should be pretty cool.
Thank you for coming. Yeah, appreciate
thank you.
It's a great addition to Wildwood and the North Shore Collinwood community. It's all about our plan to grow the lakefront and public access. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
But Michael, what going east, how is our public access? Tell me what you're doing.
Working with the county planning from Wildwood, how do we connect, get as far as to 185th as we can? So we're talking to the beach clubs. We're talking to some of the private property owners. Obviously, there's a dollar amount associated with that. But I'm optimistic. I believe we're going to get there.
It's terribly important.
Oh, sure it is. And we have to get the Hospice of the Western Reserve to buy in, which I think they will. Euclid Hospital at some point will have to buy in. But I think it's all there. We have large tracts of land that are owned by the beach associations. We have some private property owners. But I think people see the benefit. They look at what took place in Euclid with the Euclid beachfront, lakefront expansion program. They're looking at other areas along the lakefront. So I think once this work begins from the pier west, about a 3/4 of a mile up to what we refer to as the Shore Acres neighborhood, I think then people are gonna start to see the benefits for public access, for people wanna go down there and walk with bike. Shoreline protection is a big issue as well. This will add shoreline protection to all the beach clubs and the private property owners, but give us public access to the entire lakefront. So I'm on board. I'm gonna do everything I can to make sure it happens.
Now that connectivity and just doing it by increments is really the
Because I think what we have to realize, it's not just about recreation. It's about economic development.
Absolutely.
And the more we enhance the lakefront, the more people want to live near the lakefront and live in that. We have 2 miles where there's only 4 wards along the lakefront. And we have 2 miles in Ward 8 between Brassall and Euclid. We're very fortunate. And we want to provide, we want to do everything we can to provide that public access and grow the footprint of that ability for residents to come down and recreate, and then hopefully have the economic benefits from it as well. So, and thank you all.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Marty?
More water. Definitely good, definitely welcome news that the plans for Wallace Lake include a rescue boat. The only good outcome of the drownings there is if they serve to prevent any future deaths. I do wish that the woman who spoke on behalf of the family and about the quarry risks had lived to see this. As good as the boat decision was, the trail along the west edge of the lake is just the opposite, creating a hazard almost certain to cause accidents, even inviting dangerous behavior. Beyond that, I expect the residents would not appreciate folks climbing up and down their backyards or doing even worse. Accidents or crimes both rely on assistance of our safety forces. And it seems that Solon residents have joined those with complaints about Chagrin Valley Dispatch's timely response. I believe that the Cuyahoga County Sheriff's Department has also had concerns. It's too bad that Metro Parks pushed ahead with disbanding the park's efficient and effective dispatch, and now must rely on an organization which apparently promises more than it can deliver. Considering the huge and pricey number of projects being undertaken, there will be an immense amount of maintenance and repair to be faced in the future, likely coming due within a relatively short period of time. Funds should be accumulating now for those projected infrastructure costs. There may be a lot of money to play with today, but I doubt if you can count on grants to bail you out later. Building new is sexy and popular and makes great headlines. Shore up and fix up tends to raise questions of why things were allowed to deteriorate without repair money sitting ready. Thank you.
I think one point I'd make is that I think the quality of the construction has been very high. And I think that is something that helps out a lot on not having, not doing a quick patch job. I think we've done an extremely good job with just the base quality of it, whether we do it ourselves or whether we use contractors. I think the standards have been excellent.
I think just to add to that, I mean, if you look at the relative work to the Huntington Beach area, you know, from a maintenance standpoint, it was challenging, and that was authorized by the board for a rebuild, and that now spurred almost a $400,000 donation for a playground. When you look at Wallace Lake and the components of the 1970s, you know, kind of draconian architecture, what our team has been able to do, Ryan Denker and his team have put together through Sean's guidance, you know, is truly remarkable and a give back, but it stood the test of time. It stood there for, you know, 50 plus years. So, you know, this park district doesn't take lightly the things that we do. When you look at Hinkley Lake, it was designed to last 100 years. It's 98 plus or minus. So when you look at the work that we're going to do there, that's going to overlay for the years in the future. There's also an insurance scenario. Then you start throwing in, you know, renovations of basketball areas, you take the dugouts at Hinkley. We continue to make all those small and incremental updates. And so we do have, you know, a plan for our capital maintenance each and every year. Well, it would include the roof that's going on PC&A to take care of it for the next 20 plus years.
And just a quick comment to segue off of that, because I recall looking at the first strategic plan when I came on. So this is over 10 years ago. And the first real focus was on metrics, on looking at how to measure where things are, how to do the kind of planning for the very comprehensive infrastructure tasks at hand. And I think overall, it's been very methodical and very effective.
Thank you.
But I do think Maya brings to light an important point that as we expand, the costs go up. And it's a double whammy with the inflation of labor. It means we have to get more efficient all the time, which is what the rest of American industry is having to do. So it's highlighting this important subject.
Well, and I think the other thing that shouldn't be lost for the record is that also in this period of time, we've done a lot more as an organization that transcends all these different political boundaries, some 60 in Cuyahoga County alone, where communities have real stressors put on their tax bases. And so we don't play with the money. What we do is we work with communities to leverage those dollars in a very effective way. And there is no doubt in my mind that over the past decade alone, the number of communities that have been able to work with the Metro Parks instead of some separate isolated neighbor, it's been a 180 degree shift. So I just feel that we really are very conscientious in the ways that we use these dollars to benefit the region as a whole.
As an anecdote, I came up Pearl because of the traffic on 71, and the city of Parma Heights had a sign that listed their assets and then Cleveland Metro Parks on their sign with an arrow. So I think we've been very much embraced by the community as a true partner. And when you look at the visitation and the places to go, I mean, Metro Parks are one of those things where people go. So we do appreciate it. And it is duly noted that, you know, we need to make sure we're taking care of those assets in the future.
Good information.
We have the very.
Oh, I'm sorry. We are too busy japping our jaws here.
My name is Josiah Quarles. I'm the Director of Organizing and Advocacy at Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless. My daughter is an avid zoo goer, and I'm an avid hiker. I thoroughly enjoy the Metro Parks trails, the transformation of, you know, Edgewater Park. Always enjoy that in my summertime. That's not why I'm here today. However, I've come to know over the past year or so the residents at Euclid Beach Mobile Home Park and understand that their concerns as well as their commitment. Currently, there are 41 households who have bought into the idea of buying into their own park through a process of a resident-owned community. That would enable an expansion of the current park, the connectivity between the two parks on either side of the mobile home park, while holding a smaller footprint, which would enable residents to stay in their homes, preserve the community that they have there, as well as preserve the very important matter of affordable housing, which is extremely lacking in our community at large, as well as across the nation right now due to some market issues. And, you know, currently, I'm sure you're very much aware that Western Reserve Land Conservancy is holding that property. They do not want to be landlords. They want to pass that on. You're the presumptive end user, right? So I think that you have a lot of sway in this situation. And I hope that you're aware that a letter was sent out to all of the members of the steering committee that put together the neighborhood plan process with a question, both legal questions, as well as an offer to meet with United Residents of Euclid Beach, a few representatives of those who have come together. They meet very frequently to discuss their needs, their wants, their wishes, possibilities. There are $225 million available federal money for specifically for capital investments in mobile home parks. The organization that actually lobbied for that legislation, our organization was able to bring them in and have a teach-in. Residents were able to attend and learn about what a resident-owned community is. But the only real contact and negotiations that can be held are once the Western Reserve Land Conservancy permits them, because ROC USA wouldn't waste their time, their energy, their expertise, engaging in a process that would be ultimately unfruitful. At this point, the Western Reserve Land Conservancy has said that they have no interest in either inquiring about those federal funds, which could be used to address the needs, the very real needs of the park. Right now, people are really suffering. Whenever it rains, it's really awful. The needs of the park are well known, but there are options, and there is a vast array of industrial and environmental expertise here that really could be leveraged to create a beautiful model eco village right on the lake, right, which would also interact with the park. And I think that's what is the next step of what we're talking about. It's not just conservation of a park over here or a park over here, but integrating our relationships with parks and understanding that we are a part of nature and conserving the communities that we have as well as we build and rebuild the canopy infrastructure that we really need to sustain our existence here on Earth. So I would invite you to really consider meeting both with the residents who have organized themselves, as well as reaching out to other members of the steering committee and letting them know that you would be interested in pursuing some options and at least looking at it as the likely end user for this property. I think it's really, you know, everyone kind of is looking to you all in this process. So those are my my comments, and I'm happy to talk with anyone at any point about any of this. Thank you for your time.
Can I ask one question? Can you be more specific about the federal funds that are available for transitioning these mobile home parks?
Yeah, so there's a broad range of uses that money is available for. So it can be used to like move trailers around in a park, update trailers themselves, update infrastructure as far as water systems, electricity, you know, green energy, landscaping, pretty much anything that you would need to deal with within the mobile home park setting. It is specifically for mobile home parks. And I think given the runway that we have now with the you know, kind of arbitrary date set at next September, there's a long runway for a lot of planning to go into, so that once the applications are not open yet, right, but we know about this before they even are, so we could have a project shovel ready, something that people could really see.
What's
that they can buy into.
Sorry.
What's the timetable for the application?
That is not known right now.
But you intend to apply as a group?
We would. Yes, we definitely would be interested in applying for sure. But, you know, the United Residents of Euclid Beach, Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless, we're like, they're, you know, an unincorporated, you know, tenant group. We are a nonprofit with about $1 million budget. It's not something that we could actually perform. However, with all of the members of the steering committee, including the city, including the county, including many of the neighbors within Collinwood, who see interest in preserving this community, I think a plan could be built that, as well as many nonprofits, the CDCs, Cleveland Neighborhood Progress, obviously, I think could put together a plan that actually would be functional. Like, I mean, I could submit it, but it wouldn't be realistic. Like, I don't have any of the expertise to actually perform.
So if I understand that, what you're saying, the application requires some kind of plan to be part of the app. In other words, their criteria before you can even get a foot in the door to make the application.
So the guidelines for application have not been released yet. So the guidelines for what the uses could be for has been released. The amount of money has been released. It's all been passed through Congress, but the process has not been made public yet. Right. I would assume that any proposal that they got would need to have a plan and would need to seem feasible.
So you still don't even know what when you can make an application yet, because this whole program is so new?
Right. It would be, I would anticipate within the year. It passed a year ago, so I would think within this calendar year, those applications would be open.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
We have two information items this morning. The very first one, Commissioner Moore already preemptively asked. This is about outreach, engagement, and inclusion. This is something that the Cleveland Metro Parks takes very seriously. So Harold is here to introduce the topic and our speaker.
Yeah, before I introduce this familiar face, I want to answer your question. So 2021, specific numbers, we had about 600 seasonals. 2022 was over 1,000. So 2023, we believe that we are going to return back to our pre-pandemic days or numbers related to seasonals. So I would venture to say somewhere around 1,200 this year, and that's probably the sweet spot for us, 1,200. We've gone up to as high as 1,400 in some years, but I would say about somewhere around 1,200 is the sweet spot. So before Dan comes up, let me sort of tee this up. 2019, Brandon and I had a discussion regarding a vision to create more awareness and outreach with HR, meaning from a career exploration, recruitment, internships. And so part of that plan was to create or allocate resources to a position that would go out in the community in collaboration with the marketing department from an outreach perspective. So the sole purpose was to engage and recruit individuals to work for Cleveland Metro Parks in the future. Because what I saw back in 2019, that the average posting or website wasn't working anymore for us. And so we had to create a plan to get out and educate people on what we do, because we have over 300 different jobs. And what people see coming to a park, there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes in terms of career and career opportunities. So I try to phrase it as foundation recruitment, meaning we're creating this foundation that maybe you don't get a job today, but our paths may cross in the future, right? Because we've educated you, engaged you in what we do as an organization. You then are apt to apply for a job because you remember this conversation we had, you know, a year, 18 months ago. You know, Dan, I pick on Dan all the time, and this irritates him so I continue to do it because it irritates him. Dan is a good example of, he started here as a seasonal, college, was a seasonal, police force, all the way up to chief of police. And the one thing many of you may not know, and Brian remembers, is the fact that Dan, before, as part of the succession plan, was moved over to Park Ops. Was it about 6 months, Brian?
That's right.
To head up Park Ops so we can look at his leadership skills and his supervising a number of people, a large number of people, before he moved over to become the chief of police. So Dan is a success story. It irritates him when I talk about this, so I continue to talk about this.
He does not pick on me. He singles me out. Easier for later. I'll talk about it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning.
Yes. Thank you, General. Thank you for taking that up for me very nicely. There is a good. We're still going this direction. All right, good. So I wish I could take credit for the title of this relatively new role, but again, Brian mentioned that, or Harold mentioned that he and Brian and others put a lot of thought into the role. I want to make a quick statement first before we dive into a few photos and tell you a little bit about the work. It's not my operation. So I'm a manager of outreach, engagement, and inclusion, but I have access to all the resources in Cleveland Metro Parks, which is great. So it's a team effort, even though it looks like a kind of a one-man band. So this is how I'll briefly present the work that we're doing now. So we handle outreach, engagement, and inclusion, not park-wide, but from an HR perspective, and we do some work both internally and externally in each of those three major areas. So a few numbers, I won't make it a number-heavy presentation, but the work that I get to do either alone or in partnership with somebody when it comes to Commissioner Moore, comes to things that feel like recruitment, these are the places we go and do that. So typically, and because we focus on seasonals, you're going to see us at high school type events and community-based and college events more than anywhere else. But that doesn't mean we won't also go out and talk to a variety of audiences and some small kids in places. We invite them into this exact room sometimes as a school group. And no matter what we're talking about, even if it's a general presentation promoting all things Cleveland Metro Parks, if I'm in the room, they're getting one of those. Even if they're in elementary or middle school or high school, they're getting something to take with them to remind them to look at our seasonal jobs, look at our volunteer opportunities, study our internships. So all age groups are seeing us, but that's kind of our focus is the younger crowd in hopes that we'll find the next Dan or Kyle, if I can put you on the spot. Harold calls it picking on people, but also started with Cleveland Metro Parks as a seasonal employee and then navigated his way back to this. Some very basic numbers at the bottom. I have to update that because yesterday we were in this room speaking to about 15 interns and inviting them to consider full-time careers in Cleveland Metro Park. So that's the 101st event. 102nd will be tonight. We'll be at 63rd in St. Clair, talking jobs, talking programming, talking Cleveland Metro Parks. Saturday we'll be at a Juneteenth celebration. The two numbers to the lower right there, I estimate that I've spoken to about 9,500 people at these events. Literally spoken to an audience of either one or more where we're talking jobs and talking Cleveland Metro Parks. The exposure at that events, though, those events is closer to 40,000. That sounds like a great number. That's probably 3% of what the whole team does on an annual basis. So those aren't Beth Caduti numbers. That's me trying to reach out to some chiefs and get some numbers. How do we do it? Kelly's team was awesome at the onset. They branded our tables. So not only a table cover and stand-up 8-foot banners behind the table, but the collateral I put in front of you, the things they walk away with and invite them to take a look at the website and career exploration can take place online is always at the tables, but not everything is recruitment. Probably 20% of the table is the small item to take with them to think about jobs, but the rest of it is our programming. We take our gold medal with us, core values plaque, anything we can to kind of have conversations about Cleveland Metro Parks in general. Sometimes those conversations take place internally. So in the upper right, we actually hosted the Breakthrough Public Schools first ever career expo at the Canalway Center. Lower right, you're familiar with that crowd. That's an annual event that we have here at Cleveland Metro Parks, the seasonal job fair that this year we did at the Stillwater Place. So oftentimes we can do it internally at our own venues. More often than not, though, we're outside in the community. I mentioned earlier high schools, colleges, even elementary schools and middle schools sometimes. The bottom two are pictures of us doing that work in the community. So we're talking to adults about current open positions too.
Now for colleges, what colleges would you talk to?
Anywhere from community colleges to the Ohio State University Department of Agriculture, but usually, Commissioner Moore, they're local.
Yeah.
We'd like to at least meet a couple people who are interested in diving in right away. So
and who is staffing these tables?
I'm typically there, but we also can bring somebody from Human Resources. But if we're going to talk to a group about a specific program, we'll take somebody who has expertise. If it was a finance-related program, we grab somebody from Gary's team, for example. So it's a variance of people.
But Commissioner, it could be anybody. It could be me, to Joe, to Dan, to Harold, to, I mean, whoever, wherever, you know, I spoke to the interns yesterday, Joe did. I mean, it is a very team effort, depending on where we're going.
So do you feel then with what you're doing, we can forget about this hiring foreign students for this sort of thing? I mean, it'd be great if we could.
I don't know if I'd say forget about it, because that's a whole different element, right? So we can use that as a supplemental workforce, but also there's that super high value of some inclusion efforts, right?
Yeah,
introducing
yeah.
different people to Cleveland Metro Parks who've never seen our town, let alone our park district. Mm-hmm. So there's double value there, Commissioner. So I don't know that I'd, yeah, that's a supplemental tool to add more people to the workforce, but there's also some great hidden value mm-hmm. when they work in our zoo, like they did last year. So one example of engagement internally too is, you know, our onboarding. You know, we do this every month. There's a snapshot of some of our recent months onboarding employees. But in onboarding, we give a presentation about employee involvement and engagement. So right off the bat, week one, we're inviting them to take part in some of these engagement opportunities. We talk about involvement and committee work across Cleveland Metro Parks. One of my favorites, Chief Stillman's there on the right. Sometimes these partnerships grow into true relationships. And so I now serve on the advisory committee for the Maple Heights Law Enforcement Program. It's a collaborative of five local high schools, all close to Maple Heights, under the direction of Director Ken Booker. They bring their students to the police department for a full day tour every semester and spend a day with Chief and his team. And then we go to their school and participate in some activities too. And our hopes that these kids will make it through college, get into a police academy, and come join our team. And hopefully you swear them in one day. That's one example of plenty of those types of relationships we're building. Another example here, here's Esperanza working with Natural Resources, Volunteer Services, and Youth Outdoors and HR at an event where we turned a simple tree planting into an event where we can talk about jobs and careers. So much like the students in law enforcement, here's a group in Natural Resources that can come back to us in some other role. Very quickly, inclusion internally and externally. Here's my favorite internal example. There's your new idea team. A lot of familiar faces, folks that served on the last committee that met before the COVID kind of crisis really derailed some of our hardest work because we couldn't get into schools and community groups and meetings, but they have a whole bunch of new ideas. So stay tuned for an update on that. That is not for today. My favorite, absolute favorite, most inspirational piece that I'm gonna share with you today, and it's the last slide, and the last thing we'll talk about, is inclusion outside of Cleveland Metro Parks. That photo and that idea appears, Commissioner Rinker, you mentioned strategic plans earlier, on page 5 of the current second century of stewardship plan. And it is literally the inspiration for what Brian and Harold are talking about and putting me in this role. And my goal when I go out in the community to an event, we're not doing it here in Cleveland Metro Parks, is to do half of it in the environmental justice area. So I mapped that literally old school. Imagine that. I think all three of you know me well enough to know the computer isn't the best tool for me. I will pin them and make sure that half the work I'm doing is in greater Cleveland in those EJ areas. So we're reaching everybody. Tonight, when we wrap up here, I'll be going down to, like I said, 63rd and St. Clair. Yeah, that's absolutely an EJ area. So that's my inspiration for my work, that one slide on page 5 in your strategic plan. So thank you for bringing it up in your question earlier, and Commissioner Moore, I'm glad you asked about the seasonals too. I could do this for hours, but I think that's good enough for today. Thank you for having me.
So just so the last year, how many seasonals did we have? Do you say 1,000? So we're increasing at almost 10% this year.
Yes.
That's great. And I think it's particularly good if we can use Cleveland people to do this and not have to, you know.
I think, Commissioner, you know, the international program is really serving a very unique and different purpose. You know, from when you look at the mission statement that it says up there, it says inspiring conservation of our world. We're bringing in people from countries all over the globe for an experience here, and they go back to their home countries and tell what we're doing. So there is some very good strategy. It's less than 10 employees per year. It's really an inconsequential number relative to the total number of seasonals that we hire, but the outreach that Dan has been able to do is absolutely fantastic, and the engagement levels are at all-time highs. You know, this is a workforce of choice. People really want to come work here, so we're very appreciative of the work he's done, Harold's done, and others to bring our workforce up.
Terrific.
Thank you.
Great, those stories.
Presentation.
Thank you.
He also had 49 slides and got it down to 7, so I give him a huge. The next update is the natural resources update. This is in North Chagrin. This is a wetland enhancement project. John Rainier is here to give a very brief update on the SOM Center wetland opportunity. John?
Morning, commissioners.
Morning.
Everybody else. It's great to be here to talk to you about a unique wetland restoration opportunity that's been coming together over the last several months. This is a project, an area that's been on my radar since I've been here 11 years now, and it's been on my radar ever since I started. It's been on the shelf for quite a few years now, and this opportunity now is going to allow us to move forward, and we're really excited about it. For those of you who don't know, I'm the wetland ecologist for the park in the Natural Resources Division. So just to get us oriented, I call this the SOM Center Wetland Enhancement Area. And so the total project area stretches along the western edge of North Chagrin Reservation between SOM Center Road and the parkway, and basically extends north to south along that far western edge. So it includes all the kind of flat land east until those headwater stream valleys start to descend towards the Chagrin River. Whoops, wrong direction. And to give you a sense for the historical land use, the picture on the left is from the mid-1950s, and you can see that the bulk of the heart of this area was in agricultural land use or some sort of pasture. And today, if you walk through there, you can still see, you know, hints of that past land use in these tile blowout areas. There's a few of those where the existing clay drain tile has failed in small locations. And then the picture on the bottom right there is one of several significant ditches that were dug through the area many decades ago to try to shed water from the site. And if you walk through the heart of the project area, a lot of it would look like this. Pretty young forest dominated by red maple. And you'll see a lot of these kind of linear furrows that run through the site that are a legacy of the past agricultural land use, so plow lines, essentially. And the forest here the structure of the forest is less than ideal. It's a young recovering forest, so pretty dense stems, you know, trees competing for resources, and a lot of unhealthy trees in there.
Can I ask just one question? The trails over there, I've noticed they're incredibly wet. I mean, you need high boots to be able to get through that. But over in this same area of North Chagrin, that's a trail right there. Whether you like it or not, it's a trail in the sense
you mean
that
people that just
In other words, you either block it off.
I've spent a lot of time out there, and I've never seen anybody else walking through those areas.
But the actual trails, yeah, though,
you're talking a different location. This is adjacent to SOM. And what I'd like to see is if we could put a trail from SOM to in there, which was my original request 20 years ago. Go ahead.
But okay.
Let's let John finish the presentation and then we'll debate.
It is a wet area, and that's why it's so attractive from a restoration standpoint. One of the features of this area and of the surrounding areas is that there's sandstone bedrock very close to the surface, and so water perches on it. And so seasonally, you get a lot of ponding. But it's these old agricultural features that are shedding water off the site in what is really an unnatural way. So you have the subsurface drain tile, you have these linear furrows. So the water that gets on the site gets shed off quickly, unlike a more natural forested wetland system where it sits up on the landscape a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the basis for our project here. And this is after a heavy rain event. Again, you see all these linear furrows through here, and all that water is moving off site a little faster than we'd like it to. So opportunity knocked recently. We were approached in mid to late 2022 by a consultant who was working on behalf of some federal agencies, US EPA in particular. They were looking for wetland restoration opportunities in the Chagrin River watershed. They came to Kyle, I think, you know, came to Natural Resources and asked if we had any ideas. And so that spurred multiple site visits with the consultant, federal agencies, state agencies in this area that we had kind of had on the shelf as a potential wetland restoration site with a lot of potential, but never actually fit really well into some of the other established like mitigation programs and things. So I walked out there with them multiple times to give them an idea of what we thought the site could be. You know, fast forward through several months, we've just recently finalized a restoration plan for the area, as well as some legal documents that kind of outline the funding mechanism. And we've all agreed to use the money that they want to give us, $550,000, to really do some good work in this area. Unlike a lot of other restoration projects that we do across the park, this is going to be much more finesse work over 5 years. So we're not getting in there and doing a lot of earth moving. We're just nudging certain parts of this in certain directions that we think it should go in. And the nice part about the way that the funding is coming to us is that we don't have to adhere to some of the constraints and conditions that often come with those other programs.
So,
they've let us be pretty flexible.
How many acres in all do you anticipate?
So the total project area is a couple hundred acres.
North and south.
Yeah, so north, but let me just clarify that even though this project area includes, you know, obviously the nature center and the management center and all that, we have no intention of modifying any existing infrastructure. You know, we'll work around
it. Yeah. That's why I was wondering. I figured you'd be like an amoeba almost.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Now, where is the center on this map?
The center is down here.
Yeah, down there. Yeah. I'm sort of interested in how you, when you have gently sloping farmland and it's in a wet area, how do you do it so it's you're restoring the broad flow and you have so much water coming down there? Won't you have to put some sort of ditching in to be able to, I mean, you want it to be walkable, right?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
But if you could, would you?
I like boardwalks.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, the overall opportunity here is that, you know, this area more than likely would not have seen this level of investment. And so when you look at the opportunity to, you know, one of the things that Terry Robison, you know, constantly told me, he goes, just because you can doesn't mean you should. Not all areas are created equal, and the ecosystem in some of these areas is very fragile. And so when you continue to walk through and you compact and you impact the overall surface, the goal is to really restore some of the impacts that have happened over years. And so John's team is working very hard on this particular area. It doesn't mean that we should put trails through it. It doesn't mean we should put horses through it. It means that we're actually restoring the land in a fashion that actually balances the ecosystem and grows the plants back that we want. So it's this very delicate balance of how we're trying to do something there.
You're taking something that basically was farmland and kind of screwed up what's there today. And so you're going to alter it enough to make really a woods that's going to be.
Yeah, we just want to kind of
sustainable.
Just alter the trajectory a little bit on these.
But let me know if you ever want to get some trails off of some, because I think the experience to be able to, even if it's skirting an edge or just to create even a loop arrangement, but that's down the road. I get it.
So just for a better understanding of what our approach is going to be, this is kind of it right now. So this is a broad kind of overview of what this area looks like. You can see all the linear furrows all through here. And so we're going to come in here and just with just a little bit of earthwork, create some little barriers to that water shedding off the site. We're going to hold it right there. And then the same idea here is some of these ditches through here are quite deep. They've gone all the way down the bedrock. We're going to fill those ditches so that instead of it pooling the water and taking it off site, it's going to sit there. And then there's a big invasive plant management and general vegetation management component. On the left here shows the pink shading is kind of all the area that we're going to do invasive plant treatment in, but those crosshatched areas are where we've already mapped fairly dense cover of invasive plants, particularly the invasive shrub glossy buckthorn, which is all this kind of small stem stuff in the understory. Time intensive work. And we have 5 years for this project, and that's really great that we have that much time, because it's a lot of time and energy is going to get eaten up by just treating the invasive species across the site. Oh, I keep going the wrong way. And then there's going to be this somewhat minor vernal pool component. The little blue spots on the left there are areas where we've kind of tentatively said we think we might be able to put some more vernal pools in. The picture on the right is an area already existing in at the project site that some area managers decades ago had done some excavation in, and they filled right up with water. And you know, it's that sandstone underneath. It just perches there and doesn't move very much. So there's lots of opportunity, I think, for a few more of these pools. Great amphibian breeding habitat.
Did I say salmon?
Oh yeah, yeah.
The little newt kingfishers.
And then this.
Can I ask you a quick question on those pools that you have? How do you get the water out of there without creating a
settle?
Yes.
But it doesn't settle through sandstone, though, does it?
It'll very slowly dissipate. And then you have some evaporation, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, the dry season, they dry down. Not completely. Some of these pools will hold water, a little bit of water at least throughout the year.
I
see. You made a bunch of those on the other side of the road.
I think I've walked over there and seen
The wetland area beyond the pool.
Yep.
So you have pools that just
Your little vernal pool.
Yeah.
Areas. Yeah. And they can be 10 feet across, 20 feet across, and they come and go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Alive in the spring with amphibians.
Yeah.
Peepers.
This project area also supports some rare species. These are two endangered species in Ohio. The one on the right is actually a globally rare species, very restricted range. I've found both of these just in the last few years in this area. There's a handful of other species in the area that are definitely noteworthy. So in the spots where these particular things occur, we're gonna, you know, tweak our management a little bit to kind of maximize their potential.
Cool.
Is that one healthy on the right?
With the spots?
Yeah, the spots are just a late season condition that nothing to worry
won't
about.
Take them out. That's good.
Those are healthy hawthorn fruits on there for sure. Yeah.
Beach blight. Yeah.
And so this is the general timeline. I think we're expecting funding to start coming our way later this year. And then, you know, we've said we're going to work for 5 years and we'll see what we get after that. I think it's going to be a great project.
That's awesome.
Thank you so much.
With a budget of $500,000, will that cover the whole thing?
I think so.
And then how much of that will come from these sources?
All of it.
All of it. That's fantastic. Great job.
Yeah, it's a nice partnership where, you know, it's called a SEP, a supplemental environmental project. And we've let, you know, our council know that if they're ever involved in some EPA action where some remuneration would need to be put in the community for restoration work, that we'd be available for it. So it's a great partnership with Thompson High and our outside council, Natural Resources, to show that we're available and we have projects on the shelf. So it was a nice marriage of that.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Excellent job. There is no old business. The date of the next meeting is on a Wednesday, July 19th, here at the office. There is an executive session.
Is there a motion to go into executive session to discuss the purchase or acquisition of real property?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Bruce Rinker.
Yes.
Debbie Berry.
Yes.
Dan Moore.
Yes.
We anticipate no further business, but you're welcome to hang outside.
We are back from executive session with no further business to handle. I would ask for a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.